Good morning and welcome to WNHH-FM's Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the scenes and behind the headlines on the stories that make our community tick. Eli Saven is looking to make New Haven tick. He's running for a seat on the New Haven Board of Alders in Ward 1, and he's here in the WNHH studio to tell us why. Thanks for coming in, man. If you can get close to a mic, you're on. Once you get close to the mic, you can pull it in front of you right there. And like real, real close.
Perfect.
All right. Good morning, Eli. Did we make you skip class and get in trouble, Professor?
No, I luckily do not have any class this morning, Paul.
Awesome. See, but when I was in college 8 million years ago, that meant I didn't get up until 1.
Well, you got me out of bed.
All right. And thanks to the New Haven Hospital for providing support for today's program. Eli, you're the Democratic candidate, correct?
That is correct, yes. And the Working Families Party candidate.
Oh, wow. In Ward 1. Okay, so that means you're running with two different mayors, but we'll get to that. And that's for Ward 1, which mostly represents Yale, though there are a few streets that aren't Yale, right? Like High Street, which has some frats, but also some real people on it.
There are actually a good number of real so-called
Crown Street.
Real New Haven. We got, so there's the Taft Apartments, there's the Union Apartments, the Eli, some Chapel Street residences. So yeah, they're a good number of New Haven residents.
And it's no longer every dorm. Some of them are in Ward 22, which is Timothy Dwight and Morse. Morse and Stiles.
And the new colleges, yeah.
Oh, and what are the new colleges in?
Franklin and Polly Murray are also in Ward 22.
But you're in one of those, aren't you?
No, I'm in Grace Hopper College.
Oh, that's right.
The new name,
Calhoun,
not the new college, the new name.
And she's cool.
Yes, she is. She's awesome.
All right. So Eli Saven, that's the ward you're going for, but it's still mostly Yale, right?
Yeah, it's, I think, 65 or 70%.
Yale students. That's all. Okay. Yeah. God, for some reason, I thought it was more. Do you still have the apartments on Orange Street? It used to be the elderly apartments, public housing at between Audubon. So they keep changing the district over the years.
Yeah, they do change it. But it doesn't go down to Orange.
Early 80s, Marvin Kisloff was the Ward 1 Alder. He's now the president of Oberlin. He worked for Justice Department. He's a friend of mine. He was the Alder at the time. And he spent so much of his time in the elderly apartments, public housing apartments, and it really gave him a feeling for public service.
Yeah.
He spent more time on that than he did for Yale. In those days, Yale really didn't participate in New Haven, but times have changed.
Right.
So why are you running? You're 19 years old, right?
Yes, I am 19. That's right.
And you're running for the seat on the Board of Alders. Why do you want to do that?
Yeah, so I'm running because I grew up in New Haven. I grew up in East Rock. Lived here almost my entire life. I was born and raised. And I really feel like I have a stake in this community, and I care a lot about the people of New Haven. I grew up playing New Haven youth soccer. I played basketball at the Boys and Girls Club on Columbus Ave. I spent a lot of time working on local political campaigns, doing community service work, raising money for the Connecticut Food Bank, stuff like that. And it really gave me the bug for public service. And I see a lot of challenges around the city, and I'm really excited about the opportunity to work with people on the board right now and try to be part of the solution.
And you obviously like New Haven because
I love New Haven.
Like my kids grew up loving New Haven, but they needed to get out for college.
No, I'm very glad to have decided to stay here for college, and
How often do you go home?
Stay here for a while. I go home every once in a while if I need the car to go somewhere, basically.
That's like some people say that the kids who stay in New Haven to go to college are home less than the people who leave the state.
Yeah, no, I think that definitely can be true. Yeah, I if I need to use the car to go up to Hartford sometimes or something like that, then I'm at home.
So Eli, what are some of the big issues you're running on? Like if you had to tell people the elevator pitch about what you hope to do if you're on the board, besides a job that's just showing up, listening to laws being debated, and then voting, that's a big job. And
Absolutely.
That's a general job. And then people tend to have a few key issues that motivate them the most on which they hope to make a stand and make a difference. What are yours?
Yeah, so a few of my top priorities are affordable housing. So the city's been having a lot of conversations, as you know, and many of those conversations are taking place on the New Haven Independent about affordable housing and gentrification and how we grow New Haven sustainably and make sure we're not displacing New Haven residents. So I want to work on affordable housing, and I've talked to folks like Majority Leader Richard Furlow and Alder Charles Decker and other people on the board about getting involved in that work, since they were spent a lot of time on the Affordable Housing Task Force and came up with a really important set of recommendations, and I want to get involved in trying to past the, some
and
of those
recommendations.
And you also
served on a homelessness task force.
Yes.
So you've seen sort of the most extreme example of the problem, which isn't always the same as affordable housing. It's related, because obviously if you're poor and homeless, it's going to be hard to afford an apartment when you aren't getting your feet. But other issues contribute to homelessness, including psychological drug abuse and unemployment.
Yes, absolutely.
So what did you find from your work on that? What did you conclude, Eli, about, and what a great way to get an education in addition to being classed, like serving this commission with homeless people and listening to people dealing with the problem on the front end. What did you conclude about why people are homeless in New Haven and what government could do about it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm a member of the Homeless Advisory Board, the city's sort of body that works on homelessness issues. We pass recommendations that go on to the Board of Alders for consideration as both resolutions or ordinances. I was appointed by the mayor to that position last spring. And so on the commission, I've been trying to learn as much as I can about the issues. And to your questions, I think homelessness is a super challenging issue in New Haven. I think we have, as you know, a concentration of mental health and addiction services for the region. So a lot of people who are struggling with those things come to our city for help. And we should all be proud of the help that we do offer, but it also presents challenges because they are here, and we have to.
And the green is your ward, right?
Yes, the green is green is the heart.
What should we be doing on the green?
You know, I think it's a really challenging issue, and I'm really looking forward to working with the town green district and the trustees of the green to try to figure out whether we need to maybe deal with the bus system, which I know a lot of folks have issues with, and think maybe we need to potentially reroute some of the buses or try to collect folks in different location. And also I think we need to simply just invest more in mental health and addiction services. So
and there's a housing first strategy we've sort of embraced as a community, beginning with, you know, on State Street by George, where we have right downtown one facility where if you are struggling with addiction, you still get the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have on site addiction help if you want it.
Right.
Supportive housing is usually a term for longer term housing, but there it's more like just get your place and then some help getting to a longer term.
Right, right. Yeah.
Housing, I think that's been a positive development with homelessness.
Yeah, housing first policy is really important. I think it's been a national model across the country. People are realizing that if we can get folks into housing, that helps stabilize them and allows them to get the help that they need to sort of move out of the situation that they're in. And so it's been great that we're doing that in New Haven. And I think we've been working to open more beds in shelters and other strategies like that, which I think can also help.
Eli said, affordability is such a complicated question. You said make sure
that
people aren't kicked out. So with the exception of, I think, 8 people at the Duncan who were found other homes, the burst in market rate housing in New Haven has not coincided with kicking people out of places. We're building on vacant lots or in empty buildings.
Right.
So, you know, in the traditional narrow definition of gentrification, like in New York, a neighborhood's turning, so you get really nasty. The people in affordable places and SROs, you turn out the heat, you do, you know, construction at 3 a.m.
Right.
And then you just move people in to pay twice the rent. Mm-hmm. But in New Haven, we're creating the new housing. So so some people say, well, every time there's new housing, you got to at least make 10 or 30% of it guaranteed affordable.
Yeah, inclusionary zoning.
The other side
zoning,
said inclusionary zoning, which we've embraced and you've embraced.
Yeah.
Then there are other people who are big advocates for affordable housing, like the Data Haven people, who say that's not going to work because that costs money and that the best thing you can do is just create a lot of housing. And the reason you do want market rate housing is because that adds to the tax base. So then it's not so expensive to pay taxes. And that's working class people own homes and people who rent, and you know, rent increases get passed along through higher taxes. And there's an argument, and this is beyond my pay level, but you're studying both political science and American history, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you figured this one out already. They say that with more supply, if you just build a lot of these apartments, even if they're market rate, that helps other rents go down because there's too much supply in the area. So that's the best guard against people being priced out. Then a third view, which is mine, is that there's an extra level, different kinds of gentrification. So a lot of substandard housing, a lot of people live in crappy houses, especially owned by slumlords. And then other people who are just own a property or two but can't afford to keep them up. So if there's competition for better housing, like what they're going to build at Munson Street, does that mean they're going to make repairs so people live in safer places? If they do, they do have to raise the rent to pay for those repairs. So where do you stand on that? Who's right?
Yeah, I know. I think it's a super complicated issue, and you, I think you outlined a lot of the different viewpoints pretty well there. I think it's a combination of a bunch of things you described. So I do support inclusionary zoning. I think that we need to be building affordable units that are like dedicated affordable units that will serve the low-income population right now. And I think that an issue with the market-based solution is that you're sort of relying on this trickle-down effect where if you build a lot of market-rate units, then sort of middle-income renters will move into those units.
Well,
and then it'll
in
open
Goatville,
up.
We had the Corsair, which is incredibly expensive. I still don't understand why people want to go into a closet for $3,000 a month, but they love it because they get pizza ovens and that they all share. But right in Goatville nearby, the rents have stabilized.
Yeah.
Or in the late 80s, we built tons of condos, much more than the market could bear. In Fairhaven, the market blew. And then those same complexes became middle class and Section 8.
Yeah.
So one could argue, like right now, there's a new proposal, not only for market rate every day, but we just reported on one where Kensington Square, and I'm wondering why no one's objecting to a park being built on, but there's a park in Kensington Square, which is Section 8. They're going to build a big new building there, all affordable.
Mm-hmm.
Down the street from 201 Munson, which has 0% affordable housing, where they're getting an old factory into market rate apartments,
mm-hmm.
Beulah Heights is taking a whole big empty lot and building it 100% affordable.
Yeah.
So do you really need to require, if the 10 to 30% is going to make it harder to get the project built, wouldn't it make more sense to just pursue whatever can be built wherever you can find the money?
I mean, I think we do need to pursue development. I think that New Haven is going to grow a lot. The population projections over the next 10, 20 years mm-hmm. project
another
that 10, New Haven is going to grow by 10 or 20,000 people. And if we don't want rents to go up significantly in the city and we don't want to push people out, we're going to need to build places for those people to live.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that the housing market is somewhat segmented. So we have like a housing market for people with moderate incomes, a housing market for people with high incomes, and then a housing market for people with low incomes. And the housing market is not going to provide just naturally units that are going to be affordable to the lowest income population just because they don't have the resources.
You can make money unless you're a scummy slumlord who's getting Section 8 money and not putting the money into the building.
And right, exactly. And so that's why the government needs to be involved in helping provide housing for
And that's how we've done inclusionary zoning. So Rennie Salvatore built an upscale project in the Hill. We said we want 30% low income in it. He said, fine, but we had to go out and find him tax credits and other kind of state aid and federal money going through the state for that. That money's not as easily gettable as before. We were going to do a big senior housing development, all low income in or near that 201 Munson on a vacant lot by Ashman Street. And we couldn't do it because we didn't get the money.
Yeah. No, I think that we need to make sure that the inclusionary zoning policy that we do advocate for and enact does not prevent development in the city, because we need to be building housing so that folks can move into the city and that we're not that higher income folks who want to move into New Haven are not outbidding longtime residents for the units that they've lived in for a long time.
And we're getting in the weeds here.
Yes,
about a better New Haven with Eli Saven, not a new face in New Haven politics, a new face out front in New Haven politics, mm-hmm. 19 years old, Yale sophomore, running, New Haven born, running for the Ward 1 seat on the border. All this, he's the Democratic candidate. He's fading Chris Marcisse.
Yeah, I think that's right.
He's a great guy. He's a baker in New Haven. He's mm-hmm. running as the Republican. He's been around, his first foray into politics. Mm-hmm. But this is not your first foray, Eli.
That's true.
You have more experience than a lot of people twice your age. You served as director of the Connecticut General Assembly's Progressive Caucus. You were the staff guy for 44 left-leaning state legislators and mm-hmm. activists. Bills ranging from $15 minimum wage to paid family medical leave, the mandated data collection state prosecutors. You worked in Roland Lamar's office. He's a state rep, and you ran his 2018 election campaign.
That's right.
How do you find time to do that? You went to Hopkins, which is like harder than college. And now you're in Yale, which is no schlub of a place.
Mm-hmm.
How do you find time to staff a Progressive Caucus at the Capitol or run a state rep campaign?
Yeah, well, I mean, my parents are asking me the same question, trying to make sure I'm doing my homework as well. But
you doing a Hermione thing? Or
But I mean, I really care about all the work that I've been doing, and it's what motivates me to do this, the schoolwork that I'm doing as well, because I try to study stuff that's relevant to to the work that I'm doing in the city or at the state level. And so I just fill up a lot of my free time, or all my free time sometimes, with
So you worked on trying to elect state left-leaning state legislators.
So it's not electoral. at this point. So it was
when you worked for Lamar.
Yes,
and then you worked with those people in Progressive Caucus to get some pretty big victories this past year.
We had a really,
the $15
really great
minimum wage, paid family leave.
Mm-hmm.
What did you learn from that? What's a takeaway?
Yeah, it was an incredible session for the Democrats.
But it's year after year,
legislature.
There was gradually more support for those bills, but
that's
it took
right.
a long time to get there, and it took an election, a blue wave election to
get
there.
Right, and I was really fortunate to sort of come into this role with the Progressive Caucus at this moment when there was a ton of energy and momentum built up by the Working Families Party over the last several years and Quelf and so many other groups that have been
Connecticut
pushing.
Connecticut Women's Education and Legal Fund?
I think that might be right, yeah.
We're close.
Very impressive.
In the ballpark.
Yeah, we're around there.
Acronyms are a big challenge in this shit, right?
And that one's a mouthful.
Yeah, there's no fun way to pronounce it.
Exactly, yeah.
Sounds like Q.
Right. So there's been a ton of work done over the last 5-10 years around the $15 minimum wage and paid leave and a lot of other issues. And this session was sort of like the wall broke, and we were able to get a lot of those things.
What did
through.
You learn from that about what it takes to change government and move it in that kind of direction? What did you learn about what it takes on the hustings as the candidate?
Mm-hmm.
What did you learn what it takes at the Capitol?
I think the main thing I learned is that it takes a lot of really hard work. And we see at the national level that a lot of people on both sides of the aisle are very loud and about their opinions, and they go on television all the time and talk about them. But in Connecticut, people on the left, and that's why these things were successful, they are just putting in a lot of work and making sure they build coalitions and talk to as many advocates and business owners and workers and legislators and executive branch officials, municipal workers and city employees as possible, so that we have a full state coalition that understands the issues and is able to push
them. And yet Progressive elected a Democratic governor who has taken off the table what many progressives think is the number one issue in Connecticut and the country, which is income inequality.
Mm-hmm.
He refuses to consider taxing the wealthy more so they begin to pay somewhat the same rates that the poor and working class pay on their taxes.
Yeah, and that was a huge issue for the Progressive Caucus.
And he said, no way, I'm not punishing success. Basically doing the talking point of hedge funds.
Yes, that's right. So
you put in all this hard work and that's what you got.
Yeah, I mean, we were happy with a lot of the legislative victories from last session, but we recognize that there's a long way to go on a lot of issues that we care about, especially from me coming from New Haven and so many other of the other Progressive Caucus legislators coming from communities with significant pockets of poverty and inequality. And you go up to the Capitol and we're hoping that we can convince Governor Lamont that we need to be asking a little bit more from the most fortunate residents of our state.
And while you're at it, maybe you can ask Mr. Trump for transparent government that isn't crooked.
Yeah, that would be good as well.
So a takeaway, can you think of one day at the Capitol when something happened, an interaction you watched, legislators talking back rooms, someone changing a mind, a bill getting put on a calendar, where you said, okay, this is how it happens at the end after all that hard work.
Mm-hmm.
This is how the wheels of government really work.
Yeah, well, I think one really illustrative moment for me at the Capitol last year was when Representative Robin Porter took the stand in the House chambers and fought the Republican filibuster on the minimum wage bill for 14 hours.
Mm.
She went all night talking about how this bill was going to help working people in the state.
How many hours did she talk?
I think it was 14 hours.
What did she talk just about this?
No, so the Republicans were asking
Michael
questions.
Barabay?
The Republicans were asking questions and she was responding.
So how does that end? When the Republicans say, we're going to filibuster, Ron Buck says, Porter saying, I'm going to match you step for step.
Mm-hmm.
How does it end?
Eventually, the Republicans give up, and so the way that the legislature works is there actually is a provision for cloture, for ending debate, but it's never used, and it's sort of tradition in the legislature that both sides will allow as many questions as the other side wants.
So why do the Republicans do it for 14 hours? They think Robin would give up?
I don't think they were expecting Robin to give up. I mean, if you know Robin, and she's not giving up.
I think they wanted to
make a point. And they felt like this bill was going to be harmful to businesses in Connecticut.
So what did you take from that?
I think I took from that how important it is for us to have, first of all, courageous leaders at the state capitol representing us in New Haven. And we have a fantastic state delegation. But also how important it is to have so much unity and to have done a lot of organizing work prior to a moment like that, so that when the Republicans decided to make that push or to do that filibuster, the Democrats said, all right, bring it on. Because one of the things that's that happens, a key dynamic in the legislature is time. Every minute and every hour
Especially if the session closes, pressure, because bills that can actually pass don't get called.
Exactly. So the Progressive Caucus was pretty important at that moment, because in previous sessions, the Democrats may have had the votes for the minimum wage, but we decided not to to put it on the floor for a vote because we were worried that the Republicans would filibuster like as they did, and then those 14 hours that are taken up by that debate mean that there isn't time to pass other bills, because the legislature ends on a day and you can't pass any bills after that day is over.
Like fixing transportation, for instance.
Right, exactly.
Jaywan Carter, thanks for listening, Jaywan. I love when you weigh in. Focus on the core problems as well, he writes. We need more economic opportunities and training when people can afford capitalism. Besides being the consumer, life can be more enjoyable. Thanks, Jaywan. And life here
That's
is
definitely right.
Dateline New Haven, WNHHFM. Live stream to 103.5 FM. I mean, at www.newhavenindependent.org. And we're talking about Eli Sabin's quest to become the new Alder from Ward 1, which is, I guess, only 65 to 70% Yale.
That's right.
So tell me about Yale. How do you look at the Yale-New Haven relationship, and what would you see yourself either voting on or doing behind the scenes as an Alder to move that relationship in the direction you'd like to see it?
Yeah, the Yale-New Haven relationship, as we all know, is incredibly important to the health and vibrance of New Haven. Over the last 20, 25 years, we've seen a real resurgence or surge in Yale's participation and engagement with city government, and willingness to both offer resources to the city and help revitalize downtown, especially, but also just be more involved in economic development and other issues that are important to the city, like transportation and other stuff like that. So I'm really excited about the opportunity to get to work on, to be at the heart of this partnership.
As engaged with New Haven as it was under Rick Levin, now that it's under Peter Salve, and now that we have a mayor, Tony Harp, who has a different style from John DeStefano as her predecessor, do you see it in the same place?
I'm not sure. But I think that going forward, I think we need to make sure that that Yale and New Haven are working together as much as possible, because the city and
what
the,
if
the university.
Because it's been 10 years since there's been a major Yale-New Haven initiative. You had the home buyer program when Rick Levin came in the early 90s, right. And then they bought up a lot of real estate nearby, commercial real estate. And then the home buyer program was a game changer. And then 10 years ago, we had promised to New Haven. Mm-hmm. What about extending the home buyer program to city cops and teachers to help us lure some of the best people and keep them?
Yeah, I think that could be a good idea. I think just generally having more city employees living in New Haven would be a huge boon to the city, because right now we're sending a lot of our city tax dollars out to the suburbs, and if we can keep them in New Haven and those dollars are coming back into city coffers through property tax dollars, and folks are spending money at downtown stores, that will help support the vibrancy of the city.
Justin Ellicker is running for the mayor. He's the Democratic candidate. Mm-hmm. One of his campaign positions was to more than triple the amount that Yale donates voluntarily to New Haven each year, mm-hmm, to $50 million.
Right.
Tony Harp, who's the Working Families Party candidate and the incumbent, says that's pie in the sky. You can't just say, okay, Yale, now give us $50 million, then it's going to happen. They're just laughing off their butts in the corporate office, she says. Who's right?
I mean, I think that Yale does need to contribute more. I've been critical of the university over the last couple of weeks after they took a number of properties off the grand list. And
which ones are you talking about?
There are a few properties in Science Park and a couple others. So that was the properties were total value of, I think, $70 or $80 million, and it's going to cost the city $3 million in property tax revenue. And I think that Yale absolutely needs to contribute more to the city, and I think $50 million would be a great number. I think I can tell you that there are a lot of people in the community who know exactly where they would want to see those dollars spent on things like food assistance and homelessness services and affordable housing, job training programs, stuff like that. And that would have a huge impact on the economic and social opportunity that we have in the city. But I do also think that asking the university for $50 million does not produce $50 million necessarily, and the university is going to expect to have a partnership. And I think what we've seen over the last couple decades is that the most successful partnerships between Yale and New Haven have involved not necessarily cash donations or contributions from Yale to the city, but instead programs like New Haven Promise and the Home Buyers Program.
And New Haven Promise didn't involve some money. It just wasn't for taxes. It wasn't to the general
fund. No, it does involve a lot of money. I'm saying it's more of like an in-kind contribution than just cash to the general fund.
Gotcha.
And I think that I have talked to Yale administrators about this, and they say that they don't really want to just give money to the city. And I mean,
and then
I
people
say
feel
that.
Like, yeah, how do you get to say that when you're a homeowner, your property isn't tax exempt, and you're not a $30 billion corporation? You don't get to say, I don't want the little people deciding how my money's spent.
Right.
All right. So what do the students expect from you in New Haven?
Yeah. So I think I've been really excited to have the opportunity to talk to a ton of students on campus about what they care about in New Haven. And I think they have some interesting perspectives. I would say that affordable housing is connected to city residents in general, but it's also an important issue.
But students care about that?
Yeah, because lots of students are increasingly moving off campus and not living in
the dorms.
That's a
big issue. Some people say that supports local landlords. Other people say that drives up rents because you get five Yaleys in a little room.
I think both of those things are pretty similar.
Yeah, but I always like living off campus. I like that better, yeah.
Right. Yeah, so, but if Yale students are moving off campus, then they want rents to be as cheap as possible. And another issue that students are interested in is transportation. I think a lot of students feel like they are a little bit limited in their ability to get around New Haven and to get
because
around the state
of,
because of public transportation.
Right, buses stink in the connection to trains.
Right,
you can't get to the airport. It's a mess.
Right, exactly.
But part of the problem is the Yale shuttle, which is quite good in the areas it goes to. But then takes away so much business from Connecticut Transit, they might not have the demand, although they still don't meet the demand they do have on the D-Line, what's called now.
And the L shuttle only goes to specific parts of the city.
What Cornell does, where they give everybody, what is it, Connecticut called the U-Pass, the other universities say, guide public transit, will pay for it. Yale never do that.
I don't know. I mean, Justin Elker has also been talking about that issue, and I think there's been some interest among the student community about.
So you'd be for the U-Pass idea?
I think it would be a really good way to get students, to give students the ability to travel around the state and travel around New Haven. And
our
get
interest from New Haven is that it would build up the demand for public transit and support financially the ability to expand service.
Yeah, I think that's right.
See, I think Yale's issue is that they try to track people here and make them say, don't be scared of New Haven. They almost feed into that. I don't think you need to be scared of New Haven, but there's this image. So they say, we're going to protect you with our own Yale shuttle service. You're not going to be with the rabble, and we'll take your, it's going to run better than the government runs.
Yeah.
But you're going to convince them otherwise.
I will try my best.
All right, my money's on you. And we're talking about that on Dateline New Haven. Eli Saban, Ward 1 candidate. The biggest workforce in New Haven is at Yale, and the biggest union is Unite Here.
That's true.
Most politically active union in elections.
Mm-hmm.
Some people say they've been a great force to counterbalance Yale's corporate power and push a progressive agenda because they run the Board of Alders. They have the majority. And other people say they inject too much the narrow interests of the union into city policies that then get held up like some kind of community development. And they answer back saying better wages for the largest workforce and working conditions is in fact a benefit for the whole city. Where do you stand on that? Their role?
Yeah, so I think if we look around the country at all levels of government, I think we don't see what we have in New Haven, which is we have a really important group of local elected officials who are part of a collective of like low income working people of color predominantly, and I think that's really important, and it gives representation to people who are often ignored in government at all levels, certainly state and national. And I think the unions have done a great job representing folks who haven't had a voice in government in other
Well, they've really
times,
produced some of
areas.
Our best kind of grassroots leaders on the board. Walker, exactly. Jeanette Morrison, people like that.
I think that's right. And I'm really excited about the opportunity to work with them on things like the Yale New Haven jobs pipeline and making sure that the university contribute or fulfills their obligation to hire 1,000 local workers and 500 of them from neighborhoods of need. And I think we need to make sure that the university fulfills that obligation. It's those jobs can be transformative in people's lives in New Haven. And we got to make sure that the university fulfills its commitment.
So I say, but who you're supporting for mayor?
So I think, well, I was thinking that you were going to ask me about the mayor deciding to unsuspend her campaign yesterday.
Mayor Harp, right?
That's right.
So you're both a working families and Democratic candidate in Ward 1, but in the mayor's race, people are going to have to choose between your mayor candidate on one line and your mayor candidate on the other.
That's true.
What are you telling students to do?
So I think that, first of all, Mayor Harp has had an incredible run of public service to the city of New Haven at the state level as an alder and then as mayor over the last several years. And she has an incredible list of accomplishments. I think Project Longevity in the city, making sure that we are not losing any of our young people to gun violence and raising graduation rates. Those have been incredibly important results that she's won over her 6 years. But I think that people in New Haven are looking for a change and frustrated with what's been going on in the city for the last couple of years. And I think that Justin has presented a positive vision for the city. And I'm excited about the way that he's been talking about things like inclusionary zoning and other housing and just general policy priorities. And I am looking forward to working with him.
So you're supporting him?
Yeah, that's right.
What'd you think about her suspending her campaign, unsuspending her campaign, having this people's campaign mm-hmm. as a PAC to run her campaign while she sort of shuts down but doesn't her other? Any thoughts on that?
I think it shows that the city has a long way to go before we are united around a common vision for where we're going to go forward. And I think all of our leaders, from the Board of Alders to the state delegation to municipal leaders and civic leaders from congregations and churches around in the community, need to make sure that we're coming together and are able to move past whatever election results come and work together to move the city forward starting.
All right. And what about for president? Is this partly generational? Are you a Pete Buttigieg guy, like along with
Elliot? I'm not a Pete Buttigieg guy. I like Elizabeth Warren.
I'm a Warren person too.
Yeah.
How come?
I think that she's got the plans. And also, I think something that's been under discussed in the presidential race so far is the fact that Democrats are probably pretty unlikely to take back the Senate in 2020 and or in 2022, especially if a Democrat wins the presidency. And that means that we're going to be looking at Mitch McConnell and whatever he decides is going to be what goes in terms of getting actual legislation passed. But what I have a lot of faith in Elizabeth Warren on is that the next president, if it's a Democrat, the biggest impact that I think that they can have is by using the executive branch to
make progress. The way Obama had Eric Holder do civil rights enforcement, for instance.
Right, exactly.
And Supreme Court justices.
Yes, and things like the CFPB, which the Consumer
Finance Protection Bureau.
Exactly, which Elizabeth Warren helped start, and the Treasury Department, and the
They can SEC. There
are so many agencies, and Elizabeth Warren knows how we can capitalize on 4 or 8 years in the White House without control of Congress to move things forward for working people in Connecticut, in New Haven, and across the country.
Eli Sabin, the majority on the Board of Alders has not really taken a strong stand on education policy, charter type mm-hmm. reforms or not, what kind of test-based schooling or not, smaller schools within schools at big schools. Do you have any ideas about how the school system should run and what role, if any, Alders should play in that?
So I think, right now, the reason that the Board of Alders hasn't taken all that much of a stand on education is because we have a strong Board of Education in the city, and they are largely in charge of education policy.
Right, the Board of Alders' role is that once a year you say yes or no to the city's allotment for their budget, and you also can hold hearings. Aaron Greenberg held hearings about a number of issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to working with folks from New Haven Public School Advocates and other groups in the city. My brother is a junior at Wilbercross right now, so I've been talking to him a lot about his experience.
He's not at Hopkins?
No,
he's
at Cross. Yeah, that's right.
He's a good reporter. He's written
yes.
for The Independent.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
What does he say about Cross?
He really likes it. He's had a great experience so far. He's playing soccer. He's taking a guitar class. He's having a great time.
All right. What about, some people have a great time riding skateboards.
Yes.
And in Edgewood in Westville, we have a skateboard park that's really like multiracial, class, generational, all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. Some young men in New Haven. Mm-hmm. African-American wanted to have a skate park in Dixwell for the African-American community in a mm-hmm. park called Scantlebury.
Yes.
And it got controversial, even though they raised the money separately. And a legal aid organizer helped organize a couple of white longtime homeowners and a couple of other people to say the neighborhood doesn't want it because they don't want the kids making all that noise.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there were other concerns.
Well, they say it's Yale gentrification somehow because Yale put $25,000 in.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's also concerns just among community residents about putting a big concrete slab on top of green space in the park. So I wouldn't characterize
but
all
you don't
the opposition
think, but
about
you don't,
the noise.
I would characterize those as front reasons for people just want black kids, especially males, doing a lot of stuff in public right in that park.
Maybe. I don't know. I think that...
I think that's bogus. I don't think anyone at all is thinking about a little stretch of grass. They don't worry about that in Edgewood Park.
I'm not sure. I went to one of the rallies in Scantlebury Park a couple weeks ago, and it was not only white homeowners who were expressing right. concern about the project. So I think there's a diversity of opposition, and it's for a number of different reasons.
But where
reasons.
Do you stand on it?
I mean, I think that we need to have a community process that produces,
come on, take a stance. Should there be a skate park for kids or not in that
it's
park?
Not. It's not my park, so I don't feel like I need to decide whether there should be a park or not. I think we need to work with the local residents and figure out a solution that works for everybody.
Fair enough. What do you do for fun, Eli?
What do I do for fun? I love sports. I play soccer and basketball. I grew up playing those in New Haven, as I said. New Haven Youth Soccer. I started playing when I was like 5 years old. And I played basketball for a long time as well. I follow sports as well. I'm a big Boston sports fan. I like to bike around a lot. I travel all over the city on my bike. Like to go up in East Rock and other parts of the city. Farmington Canal Trail is beautiful as well.
So you ride up East Rock?
Yeah.
I did that at your age. I don't do it anymore. I think Award 1 Alders, they're usually there for only a term or two. There are a few exceptions. Mm-hmm. So they're in and out of the city often fast. But I always thought they played a great role.
Yeah.
Because they often tend to be idealistic people who are smart with a lot of energy. And for the most part are kind of humble. They don't come in there saying, I'm the Yaley who knows better. They really learn from the other Alders. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking going back, I don't remember them all, but like as a reporter, I've always found they've been such interesting stuff. I mean, Janet Stearns back in the 80s, Mike mm-hmm. Moran was great, Stephen Pryor, who went on to be a top eight in a lot of cities and policy person.
Right.
As I said, Marvin Krizloff, some guy named Ben was really for good. I forget his name. And is there anyone who sticks out, Sarah Idelson, mm-hmm. anyone stick out in your mind as a role model, someone you saw how to navigate that role mm-hmm. well?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've talked a lot. I've been... had a close relationship with Haji Çatalbaşoğlu, who's the current Alder. I think he's done a great job of getting involved in city issues. And I'm looking to sort of follow the model of New Haven resident turned Yale student turned Ward 1 Alder. I think it's really a great way for to build that connection between the university and the city. Because if you have already have a relationship with New Haven, you're in a better position to build on that.
And finally, what are you going to be doing in 25 years? You can still be the world
25 years? I have no idea. But
what would you like to be doing in 25 years?
What I would
years?
Like to be doing is some kind of public service or community service work. I don't know if that's going to be in politics.
You don't have a dream? You don't have a goal?
I don't know.
Heading
I'm,
the Consumer
I'm taking
Finance
it
Protection
one day
Bureau?
At a time. I don't think that's in my future, but I definitely want to be involved in public service in some way.
Well, I wish you luck. It's
Thank
wonderful
you.
That you want to spend your time being an Alder from Ward 1.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Which I learned today is only 65 to 70% Yale. There are right. a lot of great downtown issues.
Yeah.
Eli Sabin, Democratic candidate for Alder. Thanks for joining us.
Thank
WNHS.
You so much for having me on, Paul. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, folks, for listening. Thanks to the miracle man behind the controls, WNHA station manager Harry Droz, and thanks to Yale New Haven Hospital for providing support for today's program. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free in the group CD A Plea for Peace. This is Paul Bass inviting you to fly free with us all day and all night long at WNHH New Haven's home for community radio.